Herzlich willkommen zum Fintech-Podcast von Payment & Banking. In unserem wöchentlichen Podcast sprechen wir mit interessanten Köpfen aus der Branche über unsere Hauptthemen Fintech, Payment, Banking und Mobile.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zur 159. Ausgabe des Fintech-Podcasts von paymentbanking.com. Wir haben in dieser Woche eine ganz besondere Woche, denn es war die Money 2020-Konferenz zu Gast in Amsterdam in der europäischen Ausgabe. Die Money 2020 ist vermutlich die weltweit größte Fintech-Konferenz in drei Ausprägungen, amerikanischen, asiatischen, europäische. Und diese Woche fand in Amsterdam die europäische Konferenz statt. Wir waren natürlich relativ groß vertreten vom Payment Banking Team dort vor Ort und haben uns die Chance natürlich nicht entgehen lassen, auch gleichzeitig ein paar Interviews zu führen und daraus einen Podcast zu machen. Und der Raphael hatte zwei Interviews geführt, zum einen mit Amy Neal, Vice President bei Mastercard, zuständig für das Startup Path Programm, und danach mit Ralph Ankemedia, CEO von Siguro, Ethical Hacker und Berater der Fernsehserie Mr. Robot. Danach haben wir noch eine Sonderform vom Carpool Karaoke, nämlich der Kilian und der André sind im Taxi auf dem Weg von der Messe zum Payment Banking Dinner und haben da einfach mal ihr Resümee gezogen, was die Takeaways der Money 2020 für sie waren, und das haben wir natürlich auch aufgezeichnet. Daher jetzt schon mal auch große Entschuldigung für die Soundqualität, die nicht dem üblichen Standard entspricht, aber es ist natürlich leider immer so, dass wenn man bei Kongressen oder Messen was aufnimmt, hat man immer ein sehr lautes Hintergrundgeräusch und natürlich das Taxi auch nicht sonderlich hilfreich hinsichtlich der Hintergrundgeräusche. Von daher bitte Entschuldigung für die sonst ungewohnt schlechte Soundqualität und bitte einfach über die Hintergrundgeräusche hinweg hören. Bevor wir gleich reingehen, nochmal der Dank an InnoPay Consulting, die uns in diesem Monat unterstützen, im Blog und im Podcast. Die werden wir auch demnächst hier mal persönlich hören im Podcast zu einem sehr interessanten Thema. Da möchte ich aber euch noch ein bisschen auf die Folter spannen, bis das losgeht. Deswegen steigen wir jetzt gleich ein ins Interview mit Raphael und Amy Neal von Mastercard. Viel Spaß.
Tell me a little bit about yourself. You're doing startups, right?
I head up the StartPath team, yeah, which is part of Mastercard Labs.
Yeah.
We run an engagement program to connect with the very best later stage startups that exist right around the globe, find opportunities to engage with them on behalf of Mastercard.
Okay, cool. Can you give me a couple of names that you engage with, for example?
Some examples of some startups that we're engaged with, of course, absolutely. So I'm actually here at the show with a good few of them today and tomorrow. So let's start with Divido. So Divido is a London-based startup company, fast-growing in the installment space, so offering an installments solution for merchants to be able to allow their customers to pay over time for high-value goods in both online and in-store.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Corinne. So that's one great example. We began working with them at the beginning of last year, beginning of 2017, through a six-month program that we run.
Wow. Okay.
So another good example who's also here is MobiWave, which is a Canadian-based startup providing a tap-on-phone solution as an alternative to point of sale.
Okay.
So, So the approach that we take is we bring them through a six-month program designed to add value to the company.
Yeah.
So the companies that we work with have raised a little bit of investment, mm-hmm, have a product in market and are thinking about scale. Mm-hmm. We think that Mastercard as a partner can help them to scale.
Somehow you have scale.
Wait. Exactly. Think about new markets, think about new opportunities for their product, etc. And then we also look to connect them in with our business units, different product teams, market teams, etc., to look for opportunities for us to work together. Mm-hmm. So a big focus on co-creation, proof of concepts, pilots, joint go-to-markets, commercial deals, etc.
Okay.
And then the other thing that we do with those startups is we connect them to our customers as well.
Okay.
direction.
What's your sweet spot? Something in between Series A, Series B, something with already some traction, Series B, and something on top of that. Geographically, you're obviously quite widespread.
Yeah.
So what's the sweet spot for startups, for fintechs to actually engage with Mastercard?
So the sweet spot is Series A. So a good, solid first round of funding with recognized institutional investors.
Yeah.
For us, that's a signal that the company has product market fit, that they have some early traction, typically with customers in their home market, and they're thinking about how they can scale.
Okay.
The reason we also like that stage is that they're not so set into a sales cycle that they can't innovate themselves.
Yeah.
So we've had some really interesting companies who've kind of thought about the way that their product is conceived as a result of coming through the program because of what they've learned, and that's fantastic for us. We love it when that happens because that for us is a real sign of the value that we've been able to deliver.
Okay. Now you've been doing that, you say it's a 6-month program, you expose them to data, I assume, also connecting to the network, connecting to merchants. What's the most interesting feedback that you got so far from startups and from fintechs? Surprising, not the obvious, oh, thank you, now I actually have Mastercard, now I have more exposure.
So I think that the feedback that we get, there's a ton of feedback, and it is very positively received, and I think it's surprising to them that Mastercard is quite so open in the approach that we take, or that any enterprise would be willing to sort of share in so we don't take equity from the startups, we're not looking for something quid pro quo.
Yeah.
So I think that they're surprised that we're happy to share with them our strategy, our roadmap, all of that good stuff, to really look for opportunities to partner.
Okay.
But also the other thing that we hear is that the opportunity to have a partner like Mastercard introducing them to the market, making direct connections for them with banks, with merchants, etc., is something that they could never have experienced themselves. As a startup company, you can be knocking on the front door of a large bank for a very long time. Equally, you can find it very hard to charter a large organization to find who's the right person to speak to, and that's the support that we've been able to provide them with.
Okay. Interesting. Is there any technology that, or any vertical within the fintech space, I mean, it's like from left to right, from lending to installments to payments, what's the thing that excites you most? What are the things that, we've been hearing blockchain being around the block now for ages and still people trying to figure out. Is there anything that you say we're interested in this particular? Obviously, coming from a payment space, we like to see what happens in payments. We like to see everything surrounding it. Or is it more like maybe a negative connotation to it, but a spray and pray approach and say, like, let's talk with everybody, because maybe then we'll get a lot of influence and maybe things that we wouldn't have seen on our radar. What's your way going through that?
So in terms of sourcing startup companies, we have a number of approaches. So first of all, we put out calls for applications, which is fantastic because of Mastercard's brand. We are well recognized and we get a lot of inflow and volume from those calls for applications, and surprises as well, which is fantastic because we don't know it all, and so therefore we're interested to see what's out there and who attracts themselves to us. But we are also looking at partnering with venture capital firms, accelerator programs globally. They refer on startups to us.
Yeah.
And then our colleagues from right across the business refer on startups as well, where they see that Mastercard StartPath is a great vehicle to collaborate with a startup and test together whether there is something that we want to work on together.
Okay.
We also carry out our own desk research, so we do have areas that we're interested in, where we're spotting deals and then actually going out to startups and suggesting that this might be an interesting opportunity for them.
If we stay with desk research, what are the top 3-4 things that you're looking into right now?
Yeah, so there's a couple of buckets that we're interested in. First of all, I suppose the most important thing for us is that we're particularly focused as a team, we're really focused on startups who are looking at partnership as the route to market.
Mm-hmm.
Tends to be startup founders who have got great technological background, who want to solve a problem in the market through technology and know that they can't answer everything themselves. They tend not to be the ones that are going to build their own B2C brand, but they're looking to partner to do that.
Yeah.
So given that's the kind of the the premise on which we're approaching this work is through that partnership lens. In terms of technology areas, first, from a fintech point of view, definitely retail banking fintech obviously wouldn't be surprising to you that that's the area that we're focused on.
Sure.
But then also new customer experiences, mm-hmm. so the ways that customers are going to interact in the future, that's particularly interesting to us. New interfaces, so whether that's NLP, voice, but equally things like wearables, so using wearables for payment purposes, AR and VR has been interesting to us. Omni-channel experiences, so what startups are actually creating, fantastic experiences that span online and offline and in-store, etc.
Another
area that we think about is around efficiency. So artificial intelligence, what's that going to do to existing value chains?
Yeah.
How is artificial intelligence going to bring efficiency into back office solutions?
Mm-hmm.
But also, where are there ways that value chains can be altered and fixed as a result of things like AI? It probably won't surprise you that I'll call out financial inclusion as an area that's interesting to us.
Surprise.
But you know, the reason why that's interesting is because we have seen some really great solutions coming from emerging markets that could be scaled to developed markets.
Yeah.
The fantastic thing about starting an emerging market is you've got to scale very quickly because you're solving for a very near pain point.
Yeah.
But that they can be transported over, I think that's really exciting.
Okay.
You asked for three. That's fine.
Surprised that you have like that broad of a spectrum.
If you would have to pick one or two of them, what are the things that you see personally, not from a master perspective, but personally, what are the things that were surprising to you, or maybe to put it in different words, where you said, before it was like, maybe a fad, maybe not interesting, and now you're completely convinced that that will change something down the line for MasterCard.
So an area that I'm personally very interested in, because I actually have a background from a long time ago, is actually around the use of natural language processing as a technology.
Okay.
And as an interface.
Okay.
So we spotted a startup called Casisto back in 2015. Do you know Casisto?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I'm actually on the side. I'm running a voice startup, so we can continue talking.
Yes,
I know the Casisto guys.
Okay, brilliant.
We actually have a white label voice banking solution as well, but for Europe. But that's interesting. So we
started speaking to Casisto back in 2015, and I think at that point conversational commerce was still very
too
nascent.
Early.
It wasn't even talked about as a term.
Yeah.
I don't think the term had been coined in 2015, But we knew the guys, met them, loved the fact that they came out of SRI International, right? Because that has such a credible...
Everything comes out of SRI, right?
Yep.
So Siri comes out of that. VIF comes out of that. So obviously the Samsung solution comes out of that. Okay.
But also understanding at that point in time that this was probably going to be a solution that people were going to start getting used to. It's still a lot of skepticism, still a lot of doubt around that at that point in time back in 2015, and watching their growth and journey over the past couple of years. You know, we started out running a pilot with them ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
They came into the Start Path program. As a result of working with them through the program, we were also able to invest into the company.
Yeah.
And then we also brought them out to our customers and started introducing up to our customers the fact that this was going to be the way that consumers were going to interrogate with their bank account. For me, that's really interesting, and I think it's really interesting that it's quite, what they're doing is quite a distance away from payments.
Yes.
And yet for us, it's been a fantastic to be able to bring that as an innovation to customers.
Okay. Interesting. If I may ask, what's your background on NLP then?
And my PhD is natural language processing.
Okay.
From 20 years ago, when everybody was saying it'll take 20 years for this to hit the market. And now I'm here going...
It was in the downturn of NLP 20 years ago, right?
So.
Interesting. Yeah, that's nice. What else is there that out there that you've seen that changed, or that you think will change things? I mean, we're talking a lot of biometrics and everything else. Is that something that you see going forward?
So I think the biometrics is hugely important going forward, and obviously MasterCard has some fantastic solutions in that space.
Yeah.
It's something we as a team have tracked for a little while,
yeah.
Although not recently, but a few years ago we worked through the program with a biometrics company out of Canada called NIMI, who had created a band to detect heart rhythms,
yeah,
as a biometric, and they were one of the first people to do that.
Yeah.
So for us that was kind of, at that time, was interesting. I think that the industry is now, the biometrics industry is now well established, and some really strong MasterCard solutions, mm-hmm, including Identity Check, are perfect examples of that kind of hitting the market.
Okay. Now, what's the end game of the program? So you said that Casisto, you're actually looking into them, you've been helping them, you've been introducing them to people. Is that like the poster child of how the interaction should work? You see them, you help them, you expose them, and then you see this thing grows, this thing has something, and then you invest? Or is that like the exception to the rule?
So we are able to invest, yeah, but it's not the end goal.
Okay.
The focus for us, I suppose, is really threefold. So first of all, by doing what we do across the organization, we're helping the organization to keep those eyes open, to,
yeah,
learn,
yeah,
to see what's emerging, to see,
yeah,
what's coming down the track,
yeah,
from new entrants. So that's one piece that's really important for us. And we make sure that we communicate that incredibly well across our organization. And that's what leads to actually colleagues bringing us ideas as well. So that's really great. The second thing is then the ability to work together with those startups,
yeah,
to work on new products and solutions, to think about new ways of going to market together.
Yeah.
So really properly collaborating. And that's why for us, we're not looking at those very nascent startup companies,
yeah,
but those that have have some runway with some capital and have that product market fit. And then actually genuinely the third piece is around bringing innovation to our customers.
Okay.
So where we're able to help our customers develop their own solutions and think about better ways to engage with these emerging players, because it's not always an easy thing to do. That's hugely important for us as well. So those are the three pieces that are really important to us.
Yeah.
The investment piece is ancillary, really. Nice to be able to do, but not the driver.
Okay. Okay. Now, you've been running that out of Europe, right? Or is it globally?
No, it's global.
It's global.
So
do you have distributed teams somewhere? What's the main hubs that you actually see in this setup that actually work for you?
So the team is headquartered out of Dublin in Ireland,
okay,
the StartPath team, but we have a StartPath team that's in New York.
Yeah.
One in Singapore,
yeah,
and then one in Dubai.
Okay.
One of the things that we think is really important is to keep that complete global lens on everything that we're doing. Mm-hmm. So we have Europe, America, Asia Pacific, and then Middle East and Africa being tracked by those four teams. I think we're seeing obviously interesting stuff coming out of the big fintech hubs, which,
yeah,
I would categorize as the East Coast,
yeah,
London, Singapore, and Israel.
Yeah.
But by having the teams that we have in those different locations, we're actually seeing some emerging hubs as well, which is,
okay,
super exciting.
Okay.
A lot of the emerging markets, and that would be very true in Africa.
Yeah.
We've worked with a bunch of companies in Nigeria,
yeah,
for example,
yeah,
particularly around that financial inclusion topic.
Yeah.
But then also, you know, I think Australia is starting to become extremely interesting from a fintech hub point of view. Some locations in Latin America as well, Argentinian startups, Brazilian startups. Yeah, so there are lots of pockets of real innovation that we're tapping into.
I'm actually surprised that there was, like when you were saying, Dublin, New York City, Singapore, Dubai, there is this kind of black spot that is like Africa in South America, well, especially Brazil being like very, very hot in the fintech space.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that something that you plan to go in there, or is that something that you actually do from, I know that, for example, Visa also didn't have anything in South America for a long time. They were trying to do it out of Miami,
right,
which is close enough to,
yeah,
to South America.
Yep.
Is that something that you see will change over time?
So we've actually worked with a bunch of companies from South America. through the program. So we're completely global, and we're sourcing from every part of the world. We do have part of the team that's based in New York that's specifically focused on looking at companies in South America. We also have an initiative that we call Startpath Ambassadors, whereby we have individuals in the markets who are working with us as a team to make sure that we are scouting for the very best in each of those markets. So, so I mentioned Dubai, but actually, you know, we have a lab in Kenya as well. So we're very focused on Kenya. We've got a couple of startups that we're looking at in South Africa. Nigeria, we've worked with four startups through the program, so,
Is there, do you see, I mean, is that like, what's the focus? Help the organization, ability to work on your product and solutions, and innovation to customers. Investment being nice, what's worth buying? What's worth taking over startups? Is that something that, I mean, you've been looking at these things, is that something that you can see happening over time? It's one of the main things that we have with banks is like, banks always want to collaborate with fintechs, but only a few banks actually then start taking majority shares in startups or taking over startups. That's something that you see a lot in the US happening, but very domestic market focused, not so much cross border, or not so much in Europe, not so much in other geographies.
So I think from my team's point of view, that's not our purview, but I think MasterCard has had some very interesting acquisitions in recent times, so it's definitely something that the organization has focused on, and with the likes of New Data, Brighterion, and indeed Vocalink. So, you know, I think that that does happen, not something that my team specifically focuses on.
Let's go through maybe a couple of the products or of the interesting parts that you've been talking about. Let's go back to new interfaces, new customer experiences. Omnichannel has been around the block for better part of what, a decade? Is it coming? Or are we giving up on it? Because like omnichannel has been, oh, let's do offline and online. Then it became like, oh, let's Uberize the experience for everything. Mobile payment has been around the block for ages. I mean, you guys were the first ones with PayPass and mobile payment out there. And still we're talking about, is mobile payment coming, yes or no? Everybody looking for either Google or Apple to revolutionize the market, even though contactless payments is increasing, but still, like, when are these shifts coming? Are we always just ahead of the curve and similar to voice, like, it will be happening in 20 years' time, we just need to be patient?
So I think, I mean, it's down to the consumer, right? We deliver what the consumer desires. For me, I think some of the things that Divido, for example, has been able to produce in creating customer experiences that are contiguous, depending on whether you're operating in the mobile or the in-store environment, is a really great example of how it can work beautifully, so that your consumer is experiencing the same thing regardless of where they are. So I do think that having a close eye on customer experience as the front end is critical to making sure that we do have true omnichannel experiences, and I think startups are really good at doing that, actually.
Okay, so what's your point of view on let's talk about blockchain, because I will be killed if I'm not asking the question. So what's your point of view on blockchain? I have a very particular point of view, but do you see that happening? If so, in which part? You said like efficiency could be one part where you actually do back office parts. Is that something where you would actually put blockchain into that vertical by now? Or do you still think that there will be some end consumerism where somewhere 10 layers below there will be something blockchain based?
So it's obviously a really interesting technology. From a Startpath point of view, we've had a couple of startups that we've engaged with in the blockchain space, but really who are looking at alternative use cases. And I think that that's a very interesting way to learn about that technology and see how it can be put to original use. So we worked with a company called Everledger, which is using blockchain to authenticate diamonds. So taking the unique component components, the unique data pieces that create a unique fingerprint for each individual diamond, and using blockchain as a trace to verify that through its journey from one consumer to through the value chain. So that for me was something that was really compelling. And then at the moment we're working with an Australian startup called Identity, who are using blockchain capabilities to track payment information, which I think is another really interesting one. So I won't even dare to predict the future, but I do think that there are some interesting applications being developed.
Okay.
What's your view?
Let's not go there. It will take too long. Do you see waves on something that is hot today, is less hot tomorrow, then comes back? So the classical S-curve that you have, hype cycle. How do you actually make sure that you as an organization don't fall for everybody's talking about it, so everybody needs to engage with it? How do you actually keep a stable ship and a stable flow of innovation coming in without falling for the fads that are out there? Because I think otherwise it would be a huge distraction for you as an organization. You're not small, right? And if you say everybody look in that direction, then maybe something that is interesting happens on the other side of the floor.
So I think that if I think about the approach that we take from a StartPath point of view, we're very solution focused.
Okay.
So looking to understand where those pain points lie in order to spot what the solutions might be. Like any good startup approach, right? Customer discovery, knowing who your customer is and what their desires are, what their concerns are. Bringing that back always to ensuring that our consumers are both secure and also trusting of the experience they're having, but making sure that that can be as friction-free as possible in as many ways as possible. If those are the cornerstones, then that helps us to think about how we can solution well.
Okay. Did you ever have any major disappointment where you said, that sounded promising, and then, I mean, that's how you learn and how you refocus. That sounded promising, but it actually sent us down a rabbit hole, and we don't want to do that anymore.
So I think from a StartPath point of view, that's why we're doing what we're doing. A lot of it is to do with test and learn, experiment, see what works, see what doesn't. From our point of view, one of the things that we've done is made sure that where there are experimental technologies that we might be bringing through the program, we always ensure that that's tied to a solid team. So something that's super critical to us is doing due diligence on the teams that we're working with, ensuring that they are credible, seasoned, understand the spaces that they're going into, and are open open to the way of working that we're trying to work with, that they're interested in exploring with us.
Okay. How much actually did the spark of doing what you're doing catch on with the organization? So how much do you have now people that are maybe in the day-to-day operations now want to do something more agile, more? So is there any, what I'm trying to say is, like, you have the startups on one hand, you have this massive corporate MasterCard on the other side. Obviously one of the things that you want to have is like infuse a little bit of this market view and of the spark of agile into the corporation. How much did that already catch on, so they actually have now a flow of people, I assume more of the younger generation, and now says, oh, you know what, I actually want to jump ship from here to here, but instead of leaving MasterCard, now I can do that within MasterCard, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So from StartPath's point of view, last year we ran about 30 different commercial pilots with startups and MasterCard, so not an insignificant number. And then we also have individuals from the organization stepping forward to become ambassadors for the program, so who are scouting on our behalf. But then also within MasterCard Labs, we have a team of people who focus on supporting the organization to develop entrepreneurial product ideas. Our program Idea Box is specifically tailored towards that, where we'll put challenges to the organization and have the organization respond. They're then equipped to set up their own teams, jump out of their job for a period of time, and focus specifically on that idea in order to bring it through a classic lean agile methodology to see whether it can develop into a full program.
Did any of the spin-offs actually then become something
like tangible, like another company or something new within the organization?
Yeah, so there's a number of examples like that. I think a really good one is Simplify Commerce, mm-hmm. Which started out as a MasterCard Labs incubation, if you like, and then now is a fully integrated product of the organization.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So it is something that the organization is very interested in and focused on.
Okay. No, I'm actually conscious of time,
yes.
So pretty much done. Thank you very much for your time. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Very nice to meet you. Thank you, Raphael. Enjoy the show.
Das war Amy Neal von Mastercard und wir gehen jetzt gleich weiter. Raphael interviewt Ralph Enkelmedia, Security Expert, Ethical Hacker, CEO von Seguro und Berater der Fernsehserie Mr. Robot. Viel Spaß.
So, I hope you're actually ready to announce what you said in Singapore that you want to announce.
Yes.
So, what is it?
It's called Seguro.
That part I know.
Kind of play on the security guru side, and basically it's a consumer app.
Okay.
So there's the idea, what I've been working on now for a couple of years, is to, how do I really approach this security problem from the people's point of view?
Yeah.
Because the people are the biggest problem that I've found. It's not the technology. The technology we can secure.
Yeah.
But if you say yes, then that's all it is.
You have to put a little bit more meat on that. Well, it's easy to say. Everybody and his mother has been saying and trying to democratize or make it simple or dumb it down, right? But, I mean, it never caught on, right? So you have, like, VPNs some people are using mostly. Mm-hmm. Why? Because they have a demand, like, I want to watch the Netflix shows, but I want to watch the shows that are in the U.S. And still that is, like, a pain in behind today.
Yeah.
So
that's a great example, because VPNs is an example of a security product that nobody sees as security.
Yeah.
VPN is a product for content access.
Yes.
And then you have antivirus.
Yeah.
And here's the funny thing about that one. First of all, it's 25 years old.
Yeah.
And for the most part, nobody writes viruses. Because back in the day, yeah, you did this things that were for the purpose of destruction, sort of for fun.
Yeah. For the laws, right?
Yeah, but nowadays, we know how valuable data is.
Yeah.
The hacking community does,
yeah.
Both the good and the bad.
Yeah.
That's the other thing to keep in mind.
Yeah. Okay.
We now have a multi-billion-dollar security industry, legitimate security industry, and probably an equally as big, if not bigger, cybercrime as a service industry.
So, I like that part.
So obviously this is not going to go away,
yeah.
And this is all trying to address the tech. And yes, there's a lot of great tech behind what we're doing, but the approach that we took was in working with people like Mary Akin, who will be speaking with me here, who's the world's foremost sort of cyber psychologist, who I met in Hollywood. And in working with Hollywood, what I learned was the most powerful method of communicating is storytelling.
Yeah.
And the problem with technology is it doesn't tell a story, right? When you are an engineer, a programmer, a solutions expert, whatever you want to call it, at the end of the day, unless you're in sales, you're not telling a story.
True.
Right? So in converting tech info, tech data, into tech knowledge,
okay.
How do we convert this? This IP went to this on this port, and this is how much communication happened, and it's encrypted or not encrypted, and this is what the packet headers have. How do we turn all that into, your phone was talking to Russia at 3 in the morning, you sent this much over a UDP encrypted channel, which is not a, how do we turn that into, your phone's talking to Russia and this might not be good? It's got to be something that simple.
Okay.
And at the same time, also visual.
Yeah.
So not just the words to the story, but also to put it in a way that you could, and I'll give you a sneak peek for anybody else.
Nice.
As an example, this guy down here is going to tell you all the stories. And so this is recent activity within 30 minutes. And I can now go and say, okay, that's what's happening in the world. This is what's happening in North America. And then we're getting even down to what is that?
Yeah.
So this had 8 connections. This is how much connections.
Yeah.
That's even getting more refined by the time you all see it.
Okay.
To the point of saying, that's Twitter, that's Instagram,
mm-hmm.
a communicator over this period of time, and that sort of thing. This is legitimate applications.
Then okay.
Obviously, all the bad stuff.
Yeah.
Well, it is a VPN. It's an antivirus. It's anti-phishing. It's basically all these different security technologies that we basically took together, put them together, and made them do the things that we know how to make them do,
mm-hmm.
to ultimately provide you with sort of gamified experience of where your data goes.
I like that.
Starting with where your data goes,
yeah.
Then you'll start going, well, I didn't know my data went there. Uh-huh. Because you think the data is sort of non-physical.
Yeah.
But it is physical. It actually does end up at data centers around the world. And hence why GDPR, everybody's freaking out about it. Because it's not a European thing. Your data goes around the world, and if it touches Europe,
ask Facebook and Google about the lawsuits. That's a very real thing.
It is. Exactly. And when you start talking about the kind of fines they've defined, it's really what making people, and I'm glad that's happened.
Yeah.
So from the consumer approach was, how do we put this in an easy way that provides all of those different technologies, mm-hmm. the VPN, the, you know, all of the different security technologies that, to be honest, we've used not only for major corporations, but government, to spy, if you will, and then empower you, give you that power. How do we make you hack the hacker in a way, right? And the key to that is really through knowledge. But most people don't really want to deal with security.
Mm-hmm.
And I always explain as that's the bouncer.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really want to deal with the bouncer. You know, you go into the club, you're with your three buddies, you ain't got enough girls to get inside. Sorry, you're going to have to wait here. When you say security, you almost always
it creates
this negative feeling.
Yeah.
So we really looked at the psychology of this.
Okay.
And so I think it's really more about safety, because security is only an element of safety.
Yeah.
And changing, you know, the narrative and sort of creating a movement. I hate to think of what we're doing as a company, because very few companies, in my opinion, unfortunately, are all really just about its consumers.
Yeah. Well, mostly also in the security sector, because fear sells, right?
Mm-hmm. So fear, uncertainty, and doubt has been used by all of them. Mm-hmm. There isn't one company who hasn't used fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And we really, it's very hard not to, right? But so I think that there's ways to do that. And a big part of it is to make safety online, and make, by that I mean really make the issue of security a matter of culture.
Yeah. So it's... Would it be wrong to say that when you're saying it's a movement, it's more an educational access or a way of educating people in a very simple way so that they are... I mean, let's take the real world example. Nobody steps out of the car, out of his house without locking the door.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
So that's common sense.
Yep.
Would it be fair to say what you're trying to say is do the equivalent of that in the cyber world?
Absolutely.
And actually say, like, come on, it's common sense that you actually don't open up a GIF that says it comes from your mother in Russia that you don't have.
Yeah. Funny kitties. Everybody opens up the funny kitties. It's exactly that. And that's, again, that's why I said we took this approach of looking at the psychology of what happens when we interact with computers. And there's a difference. It's like I was mentioning before, it's like the camera. When you know the camera's there, you act different.
Okay.
When you don't know the camera's there, right? So it's a lot of the same, but there are some very big differences when you're on this machine that you're typing on, right? There's a disconnect between the physical and this virtual.
Yeah.
And there's something in between we haven't defined yet, right? And so the psychology of what happens in that process, we would do things online that we would never do in the physical world, right? I mean, going back to my early hacker days, you know, you do something under your handle, and only to boast that you were the one that did it. Now, what kind of criminal would go out and shoot somebody and go, I killed him. Hey, check it out. I did it. I'm the one who did it. I robbed the bank. That never would happen in the physical world.
Mm-hmm.
But the moment we interact with this thing, what we call a computer, and the digital world, there's this disconnect that almost as if it's not entirely real.
Yeah.
And there's nothing more real.
Yeah.
In fact, it's more real in the physical because we couldn't not get along without it now.
Mm-hmm.
We are so relying on technology that if you took it all away tomorrow, we would be, you know, yes, we would adapt as human beings, but...
Yeah, but it would be like Stone Age for a second.
It would be Stone Age for quite a bit before we would figure out how to operate again.
Yeah.
We have forgotten, you know. It's like one of my guys here, my team, a very funny guy, says, my chief creative guy, says to me, we pulled a book off a table where we were staying at a hotel, and it was an atlas. Mm-hmm. And he said, "Hey, look at that! They printed Google Maps on a book." And that's where we are. We adapt and adopt. Once we adopt technology, we almost forgot that there was a thing called an atlas before Google Maps. But they printed it, you know, they printed Google Maps.
They printed Google Maps, that's nice. Now, help me with, I mean, I know that you've been like a tech advisor, obviously, for one of the nice shows that we have surrounding the whole thing. So, Mr. Robot, how did that influence you into realizing that, I mean, Hollywood has always been good in communicating complicated things, right?
Yes.
So is that one of the aha moments that you had?
Absolutely.
Where you said, like, holy crap, we've been doing this wrong the whole time?
Absolutely. That's the funny thing about it is that the, you know, tech and hacker, especially the hacking, look at Hollywood and we laugh, right? You know, movies like Hackers, back in the day, when Angelina Jolie,
where it was when she was very young.
I think her first or second movie, and
something like Sneakers back in the day.
Sneakers,
right?
One of my favorite movies, and probably actually a lot closer to the reality.
Yeah, true.
But yeah, so many movies, right? That we would look at and laugh, right? And so, until then, I got on the inside of it, with my task being, one, to help secure production, because now it's all digital.
Yeah.
And two, to help the writers and the director with the legitimacy of the content itself, which gave me a great deal of access and collaboration with some of the most creative people I've ever met. Mm-hmm. And when you start going through that process, that's exactly what I realized is, wait, for me, in the world of communications, where the stuff I work on applies to billions and billions of people, mm-hmm. just like the stuff they work on, mm-hmm. in many cases, mm-hmm. but they're actually the better communicator, right?
Okay.
And that was definitely the light bulb went on moment of, wait, I just watched the entire process with Oliver Stone on two movies. So I worked with a legend and seen the process that it goes through to take this idea that we're going to make a story about this. Mm-hmm. And that this, in the sense of Shiguru, that this is each story.
Yeah.
How do we turn each story, meaning each one of those communications your phone does, into a movie?
Okay.
Think of it that way. That has a visual element.
Yeah.
That you can easily understand without all of this sort of jargon and three-letter acronyms that nobody would understand, right?
Okay, so if you would have one thing to say to the people that do the Black Hat, for example, what would be the one thing that you think the security industry needs to change, needs to adapt? Because, I mean, the Black Hat, and I've been doing that like for a couple of years.
Oh, you've been going to Black Hat, yeah.
Yeah, and it's fun. It's always...
Oh, absolutely, it's fun.
It's also nice that they try to dumb it down, but more like with this little wink in the eye, like, oh yeah, for the dummies in the room, please go like this. I'm an engineer by training. So
you're right. You're absolutely right, though. But that's number one, that's the part of the problem, mm-hmm. is there's a bit of arrogance, right, that comes from the security industry. And, you know, it's a matter of opinion, whether rightfully so or not, because they know something you don't. But then again, you get hit by a bus, and that doctor knows something you don't, no matter how much you know about computer hacking. So there's a bit of that, but that's always been there as part of that community.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of value to the Black Hats and the DEF CONs.
Yeah.
You know, over the year, that's now become just a gathering to see old friends. But the briefings themselves and the content that's being discussed itself is only good to those in the in the know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you know, having been there and done that over the years too, what I realized was we're just kind of talking to ourselves here.
Yeah, true.
So, you know, great, we have a room of thousands of people.
Well, it's an echo chamber, right?
Yeah. So what happens, you step outside that echo chamber and it doesn't really have an impact.
Well, the interesting part is if you, obviously it's in Las Vegas, but if you actually go to one of the normal retail stores that you have in some of the malls or in the hotels, and then you start talking with a normal clerk, mm-hmm. it goes like, oh yeah, we have all of these crazy people running around right now. I think it's Black Hat or DEF CON right now.
Yeah,
right. I don't know what these guys do, but they do something with computers. And that's it.
Yeah.
That's what the people get.
That's true.
And that's actually the interaction that you have between the community,
yeah.
which is so much, has so much knowledge.
Yeah.
Also would freak out a normal person, right?
Yes.
If I would tell you as a normal person what I could do with your phone and what you're doing and so on and so forth, you would freak out completely.
Absolutely.
There is a huge divide in the whole thing, and it's getting worse. Now, everybody's talking about AI. Everybody is talking about self-driving cars. Everybody is talking about automation and robotization and what have you that. I mean, it's obvious that the people, like the normal people, like if we're talking in the US, not the ones on the East Coast or on the West Coast, but just a huge blob in the middle, is completely freaked out.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Do we need to have more Hollywood dividing that? Do we need to have more Seguros telling that?
Absolutely. I welcome as much competition in trying to figure out or in figuring out ultimately how to be better communicators. And I think that's the thing the cybersecurity industry and people in it could be better at, right? Because, mm-hmm. We're great in the tech, but we need to be better in the people. And that's part of the problem, is because the reason we went to the tech was we were not very good with people.
Yeah.
And some of the most brilliant people I know are useless in putting them in a room with humans. So that's why they're good with computers. But there has to be that sort of, people, I think, to some degree, like me, who have figured out over time how to do both and become better and better communicators to the rest of the world. And that's why I really enjoy doing more conferences like this, where it comes out of left field to some of these people. Well, it's a finance conference, everything here is about banks and payment systems, and
you scared the shit out of people in Asia by telling how many things were stolen in ICOs.
Yeah.
I saw the people left and right and center go like gasp and everything else, and I was like, seriously guys, that's like normal, everybody knows that. They were like completely freaked out. But it actually, it takes this kind of shock and awe to actually open up the eyes of even people that decide on a day-to-day basis if security or safety, I like safety more as a word, if safety is actually something that they need to do or not.
Yes. And that's the key, is that these decision makers are the ones choosing whether to spend more or less, and it's not a money issue. That's what I'm trying to say.
No, they're spending a shit ton of money on something else.
Right. It's a knowledge issue. It's an educational issue.
Yeah.
And the tech is just a small component of the bigger problem.
True. How much is people like ourselves, like the press, not helping by blabbering gibberish like GPG is broken, you can't secure your email anymore because something happened, I don't know what, but please don't encrypt anymore?
I don't know if it's a matter of helping or not helping. I think it's kind of a neutral issue, because, to be honest with you, we're all, for the most part, the way I see it, is the world is drowning in information right now. So their heads are already below water. And, what they've got left in their lungs is what they came down with right now, with the amount of information. It gets to a point where they make a decision of whether to just die in it or try to swim back up and get some more air.
Okay.
So I don't think that, again, the whole thing of using fear, uncertainty, and doubt is unfortunately just in the news. It's just journalism. It gets more ratings, if you will. It gets more people like the drama, undoubtedly. But I think, like I said, it's at the same time, look at, cultural things like hip-hop and things in the arts, jazz. Look at all these different things that are cultural phenomena, the movements that have taken off. They weren't that way because of negative things that the press reported. It's about the truth of it, the truth of the music, the truth of the words, the truth of whatever, the poetry or the dance or whatever it is. So I think that's my approach, and that's, again, what I'm learning from working with the creatives, is to turn you know, turn the messaging into something that has to do with where you feel culturally as part of the world, you know. And we all, again, if we bring it down to, you know, screw the consumer word, if we bring it down to the human people, we all care about something. And so the moment that you touch that thing that you care about and you realize that thing you care about is connected to the internet, because it's all connected to the internet, then all of a sudden you're going to care more about safety and security. But that caring is going to come from the right place. Okay. It's not going to come from a negative place.
Okay. So you say something like, let me try to find a good example. I can convince people that taking photos of your children, for example, and putting them on social media is a great idea, but there's an inherent risk in that.
Yeah.
Because it's not only your grandma looking at it, but it could be other people that do other things with it.
Absolutely.
So it's finding these simple stories that everybody gets.
Absolutely.
And then trying
the simplest,
to,
the better. The
and most. Then trying to convene from that the message, that's why you should care.
Yeah, and actually, you don't even have to convene the message. If you're doing a proper job of communicating the message, the rest is up to the person.
So they get it anyhow.
They get it. I mean, you get it.
Okay.
I mean, it's, for example, talking about a hack and then doing a hack on someone.
Yeah.
There's a big difference. You can talk about it and they go, oh yeah, no, that's kind of scary, but then you do it to them and they go, oh shit, then they really feel it, right? So that's really more what it's about. As this is happening on our phones and our devices, to be able to get in that, turn it into a story and tell somebody, hey, this is happening, do you want that to happen? And they might say yes and they might say no.
Okay.
That's the thing, is that it's kind of like the word privacy. I hear this thrown around all the time. What is privacy?
Good point.
I know what privacy is in the physical world.
Yeah.
You know, I gotta go take a pee. I want to be private. I don't necessarily want you to look at me when I'm doing it. So we know what privacy is in the physical world, but what is that in the
digital world?
Yeah. Right. And there's always this, you know, well, I'm not doing wrong, I'm not doing anything bad, then I don't have to worry.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not the point, you know? The point is you still want to pee.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong. If you got to do it, everybody's got to do it. But you want to be the one to say, I want to have a door there, or I'm okay with just doing it right here. That is actually a personal thing. So privacy, literally, it's not a matter of, it's personal. It's a matter of having to be personal.
Okay.
And so these choices we make are personal. And we wouldn't necessarily all choose the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, if I were to assume that and automate that to the degree of many other technologies that they automate this kind of thing, I as a hacker would use that against you, because now I know that this is the rule.
Yeah.
This is the pattern.
But isn't that actually something where stop taking notes because this interaction is so much better. Isn't that something that actually is hard to do in a simple product like you're trying to do?
Because it's extremely hard.
Because it's like there is no one size fits all. The split second that it becomes a stupid rule, it can be used against yourself.
Absolutely. But so that's the whole thing with the way we're going.
How do you create this optionality? How do you create that?
You guys can go eat, you know? What does that have to do with the other? Your logic is flawed. You can go eat.
How do you create optionality so that what you define as privacy, quote unquote, in the digital world must not be the same that I have defined as privacy?
Well, that's the whole thing, is I'm not the one to define privacy, you are.
Mm-hmm.
So just what I'm doing is all these technologies that already are in use and have been used in many different cases, I'm just empowering you with them. So I'm taking the same, you know, the same technologies that, you know, anything from, you know, governments and major corporations may use, but I'm just putting it in your hands in a very simple, with a joystick.
Okay.
Right? Now, they have to have an IT department and data centers. No, we'll take care of all that and just give you a joystick for you to go up, down, left, right, if you will, you know?
Okay.
And yes, it is extremely difficult, and this has been something that I've been working on for... I mean, when you put it all together with the Hollywood work and all that, probably for a good 7 years.
Wow.
Only in the last, you know, year did we kind of go, boom, okay. We had built a proof of concept and then said, okay, this will work this way. And it can provide all these mechanisms to access content. And so we are VPN too, in addition to that. But, you know, even addressing the issue of content, well, what if I can... I now have the relationships in Hollywood to be able to go back and say, well, if you're a Segura user, that's a value add for Showtime and HBO, because I can guarantee you that's an American traveling abroad who wants to access HBO. And if you want to take that away from him because he's traveling abroad, there's a chance for you to lose that user. But in addition to that, you're now providing that user with all of this additional safety, which adds safety and lessens risk to HBO. So there is a give and take.
Well, it's a good way to actually approach partners that have been a very black and white, right? So the content providers have been, you're not where you're supposed to be, so you're banned of everything.
Right.
Which is like, I'm paying for that service. Just because I'm traveling, I shouldn't have access to that? That makes no sense.
Exactly. I have that same problem. And of course, I'm technical enough to know how to get around it, but... But again, it has to be something that, again, there's no reason why that should be that way. So providing just the tech, but then also providing the partnerships and the relationships behind that to truly sort of empower the people with what they should have the power to do.
Now, let me go back to email, because I think that's one of the channels that most of the people have been using now for a couple of decades, maybe. But it's still like... crazy that we have problems like spam, that we still have people installing crazy shit on their computers just because they click on something. Or sometimes you just have to click on a link and or you do a drive-by and something just happens.
Absolutely.
Do we need to get rid of email, or is there a solution to email?
You know, my first gut feeling is you can't really get rid of email. It's sort of like a backbone to the internet. When you think the internet, you think, you know, 10, you know, 15 years ago, whatever, I remember seeing a news report, morning news in the US or whatever, that they didn't know how to say that symbol, right? And here we are now, and we can't live without that symbol. So I don't know that we could completely get rid of email, because it is, you know, the problem with any technology is that when it has to be backward compatible to something, it's always going to be flawed.
Yeah.
And so to think that, is it possible? Yes. Is it possible in the coming, you know, 8 years, months, who knows what tech, because it moves so fast, that something can come along that over a period of time will replace what we understand to be as email? Sure, but I mean, now we've got, you know, 15 different messaging apps from, you know, Google Messenger to iMessage to Signal to you name it, right? So, and encryption this and encryption that, and you got to also remember encryption, well, it's on one side a good thing, it's also a bad thing. Hackers use encryption so we can't see what they're stealing.
Sure.
What we're stealing from you. So that's that idea is, it's, it works both ways. So technology can work both ways. It's both good and bad.
Yeah.
An email, you've got to realize that when email was created, no one thought a million people would use it, much less billions of people would use it.
True.
So inherently it doesn't have security. Mm-hmm. If we, again, global awareness.
Yeah.
The more we talk about this, the more we come out of the black hats and start talking to the rest of the world in a way that they can understand.
Yeah.
I think the more that, okay, well, we can operate with that knowing that if I got an email from you that said open this, it might not be from you.
Mm-hmm.
And if I know you, I might just call you and go, do I open this?
Mm-hmm.
back to that sort of having a...
Yeah.
We have to build some resilience in the way we do things.
Yeah.
And we're just too reliant on what we see, and it's really easy to change what you see.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think we can't just completely think that email is going to go away. But I think the more aware we become, the less that we rely on what we see from email specifically. But PGP or not. You know, yes, PGP and all these things have been helpful, for sure. But at the end of the day, That's the people in the know.
True.
My mom doesn't know what PGP is.
True.
And even if she did, that didn't mean she would use it correctly or use it all the time.
True.
So,
true.
So yeah, there are, I think, possibilities of using, you know, messaging capabilities in the future that will go away from email, but I don't think email will go away. It's just too...
Ingrained in the okay, let me ask like the last question, then I really let you go, because I know that we're all running late.
No worries.
AI and weaponization of data in the security world, there's been like a lot of talk that black hats can actually, because they're more technical, because they know how to operate with these data, that they can actually do more harm than the security world trying to adapt into different kind of attacks and attack vectors that are now, I would say, more fine-grained. They can be actually targeted to not a multitude of users, but if you are a valuable target, and we're not talking state nations, right? But if you are a valuable enough target, then I can actually try to spear into you and use data that is available to you because you're worth the effort.
Yeah.
Is that something that you think we will see more of because until it becomes less?
I think we will see more of that. I think what the part that I think you're leaving out is that I don't think that we're just going to see more of that from the cyber side.
Okay.
I think we're going to see that more of that from the corporate side.
Okay.
What we're seeing with Facebook and Cambridge Analytica is a perfect example of that.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a fine line between what is legal and illegal.
Yeah.
And the illegal, obviously, the thing they have going for them is they have no rules.
Yeah.
They have no boundaries.
Yeah.
They can do and try whatever they want as long as they know what they're doing and they know how to hide themselves well enough. You know, we've seen a hell of a lot more arrests over the years.
Yeah.
But think about the numbers. You're still talking about, what, a couple of handful of people getting arrested for computer hacking?
Sure.
By comparison to, you know, billions affected by it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the thing we have to be careful with is a matter of social responsibility, because just because something is a C-Corp, S-Corp, LLC, OU, whatever you name it, does not mean that they're not doing or potentially doing the same thing that a black hat would do.
Okay. So you actually see that irresponsible, or maybe it's also just because they can and because they have the data, irresponsible corporations not knowing, not seeing what some people are doing and then weaponizing that, that is something
that
you see?
I think, you know, in all honesty, it's a... You know, you're questioning whether they know about it or not.
Yeah.
And I have to question whether they know about it or not. So just because you got caught doesn't mean you didn't know about it.
Yeah.
And it's great to be in a position to say, I didn't know about it.
Yeah.
And whether that's true or not, that's
a different,
that's a different
story.
Question.
Okay. Ralph, thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Das war das Interview mit Ralph für Enke Media und jetzt gehen wir gleich weiter zum Money 2020 Resümee von Kilian und André. Im Taxi in der Sonderform von Carpool Karaoke haben sie einfach ihre wichtigsten Takeaways und Learnings zusammengefasst von der Messe, von der Konferenz. Viel Spaß!
Wie war es hier auf der Money 2020 bisher?
Ja, wir sind ja gerade in Amsterdam, haben uns die Money 2020 Europe die ersten zwei Tage mal so angehört und fahren erschöpft zu unserem Abenddinner, auf das ich mich freue.
Also du freust dich aufs Essen. Und wie war so das Event bisher für dich?
Auf die Gäste natürlich nicht.
Nein, Gäste? Gehen wir nicht alleine essen? Du hast mir was vorenthalten.
Das wurde wieder welche eingeladen. Ich habe doch letztes Jahr schon gesagt, das sollen wir sein lassen. Nein, also... Zwei Tage, man hört so ein bisschen an der Stimme, durchgehend geredet, ein Meeting nach dem anderen, was aber genau auch aus meiner Sicht der Sinn der zwei Tage war, also dahingehend sehr gut. Sehr viele Leute getroffen, sehr unterschiedliche Leute getroffen, bin kaputt, aber zufrieden und freue mich jetzt auf einen entspannten Abend, also Amsterdam war gut.
Du hast ja mittlerweile mehrere Money 2020s in verschiedenen Locations hinter dir, ne? Also du warst in Kopenhagen auf der Europe, du warst in Singapur. kürzlich in Asien und du warst auch schon in Las Vegas. Mhm. Gibt es irgendwas, was du hier in Amsterdam anders findest? Oder,
Also mir gefällt der Aufbau des Events deutlich besser als wie die sehr ähnlichen Varianten in Singapur und Las Vegas, die sehr amerikanisch geprägt sind mit ist in einem Hotel auf unterschiedlichen Floors. Sorry,
mal kurz unseren Taxifahrer bitten, das Fenster zu machen. Is it possible to close the window? Ja?
Genau. Vielleicht für unsere Hörer, wir machen heute eine Version des Carpool-Karaoke-Podcasts, machen ihn direkt aus dem Taxi. Nee, aber zum Event, das gefällt mir deutlich besser, weil dieses auf unterschiedlichen sagen wir mal, Stockwerken verteilte Event macht das Networking sehr, sehr schwer. Macht es auch schwer, dass man mal zufällig Leute trifft, weil man eher in irgendwelchen Vorträgen verschwindet. Das war hier viel, viel besser. Auch der Raum für Gespräche, Sitzgelegenheiten war gut. Das heißt, damit von der Perspektive so mit die beste Money 2020. Fairerweise muss man sagen, vor allem in Singapur war es natürlich die erste. Da muss man sicherlich schon noch mal ein bisschen Room for Improvement lassen und
ja. Also ich habe auch das Gefühl, dass die irgendwie mit jedem Event einfach lernen, ne? Also letztes Jahr, also so Essen ist irgendwie nochmal deutlich besser geworden, so die verteilten Essstationen, es gab keine langen Schlangen und sowas, muss man irgendwie auch echt sagen. Also das waren so die harten Fakten. Also ich finde auch bisher, also im Vergleich zu Kopenhagen mindestens genauso gut. Ja. Kopenhagen fand ich damals diesen Gang halt immer so super praktisch, weil du dort einfach nur stehen musstest und jeden gesehen hast. Das hast du hier nicht so gehabt, so einen zentralen Ort außer den Eingang. Ja. Aber da steckt es ja doch seltener hin. Also fand ich irgendwie auch. So inhaltlich, hast du irgendwie das Gefühl, dass sich was verändert hat in den letzten Jahren? Gibt es einen anderen Schwerpunkt oder eher das Gleiche?
Nee, also bei den anderen Sachen kann ich dir zustimmen. Also das Food-Konzept fand ich auch sehr gut. Dieses Massenessen, was man sonst immer hatte. Alle müssen jetzt gleichzeitig Punkt 12 zum Lunch, ob du willst oder nicht, passt irgendwie auch nicht mehr dazu. Leute, das ist eine ganz gute Analogie, wollen dann essen, wenn sie essen wollen, genauso wenn sie dann zahlen wollen, wenn sie zahlen wollen und nicht, wenn jetzt jemand sagt, jetzt 12 Uhr alle Hunger haben, also das wäre sehr gut. Inhaltlich habe ich jetzt keinen großen Shift gemerkt zu den letzten Jahren, auch nicht so einen großen Unterschied, obwohl ich jetzt mir Asien und USA angeschaut habe, wo man so sieht, okay, das ist jetzt in Asien komplett anders als wie hier. Die Themen sind ähnlich, die Unterschiede sind eher in Nuancen oder im Zusammenspiel der Player dort.
Also ich habe natürlich eine total selektive Wahrnehmung und so das Thema PSD2, was uns ja bei FIU sehr stark beschäftigt, habe ich natürlich hier wahrgenommen und in den letzten zwei Jahren in Kopenhagen war das irgendwo auch teilweise auf den Ständen drauf, die Leute haben darüber gesprochen, aber es war halt eher so ein bisschen wie Teenage-Sex, ne? Ja. Und jetzt hast du halt irgendwie das Gefühl, dass es wirklich real wird. Immer noch nicht so ganz real. Also ich hatte gerade noch mal so zwei Panels gegen Ende, die ich mir angehört habe, wo ich auch dachte, okay, momentan reden die ganzen Menschen noch. Ich würde gerne nächstes Jahr wirklich mal Tatsachen sehen. Das fand ich schon super, super konkret, dann doch in den Diskussionen mit vielen, wo du im letzten Jahr noch auf einem abstrakteren Level geredet hast.
Ich fand auch gerade da angegriffen an das PSD2-Thema, dass einige Player, die natürlich sich sehr stark mit dem Thema PSD2 beschäftigen sollten, nämlich vor allem die Banken, gar nicht so präsent waren, wie ich es gedacht hätte. Natürlich hat man bei den Gästen viele Vertreter von Banken mal da gehabt, hat das Gefühl gehabt, dass man aus Deutschland kommt, jeder hat mal einen hingeschickt, ja, aber so die richtige Relevanz war doch noch nicht da. Bei den Ständen hat man zum Beispiel kaum eine große Bank gesehen, also eigentlich glaube ich gar keine.
Die einzige deutsche Bank, die ich gesehen habe, war die Fidor.
Ja.
Die wirklich einen Stand hatte, also so ein sehr kleiner, überschaubarer Stand
ja.
Für ihre Tech-Solutions,
genau.
für die Fidor Tech
oder Fidor-Solutions oder wie es jetzt heißt. Genau. Aber wirklich Retail, ne? Klassische Retail-Banken, nichts zu sehen, ne? Also abgesehen von der ING, die natürlich mit Holland als einer der Hauptsponsoren mit eigenem Café hier sowieso präsent war, aber auch Rabobank so ein bisschen, aber dann war es auch schon vorbei.
Und von den Speakern waren es auch eher internationale Banken und weniger, also ich hatte gerade auf einem Panel, es war jemand von der Deutschen Bank, aber sonst habe ich irgendwie so unsere Platzhirschen, Sparkassen, genossenschaftliche Banken gar nicht, ne? Commerzbank habe ich irgendwie auch nicht gehört. Vor zwei Jahren war noch wie ist er denn, der ehemalige CEO von der Commerzbank ja noch, Blessing war noch auf der Bühne.
Aber noch nicht mehr CEO, da gerade schon raus gewesen.
Da war er gerade.
Ich habe auch heute interessanterweise mit jemandem von den Volks- und Raiffeisenbanken gesprochen, der interessanterweise aus dem IT-Bereich war, der meinte, für seine Produktkollegen, die hatten das nicht auf der Uhr. Ja, der hat denen gesagt, ich fahre zur Money 2020. Da war die Frage, wieso denn eigentlich? Also was ist das und wieso denn eigentlich? Und er meinte auch, ja, eigentlich ist es doch euer Thema, weil produktmäßig da natürlich schon einiges, müssen wir mal zum Anschauen, zum Diskutieren gibt. Also da würde ich schon hoffen, dass in den nächsten paar Jahren da die Awareness größer wird, ohne jetzt direkte Werbung für die Money 2020 machen zu müssen.
Ja. Glaubst du, dass die Money 2020 über das Jahr 2020, obwohl ich weiß natürlich, dass es nicht der Begriff ist, sondern dass es ja nicht ein IT-Begriff ist, dass die Relevanz hat und dass die in Europa so groß wird wie möglicherweise in den USA?
Ich glaube, von der Größe von USA so weit weg sind wir nicht. Also Zahlen von den Veranstaltern waren schon, dass man nochmal um 50% zugelegt hat von den Gästen. Und die war ja jetzt ja letztes Jahr nicht wirklich klein. Ja. Also Größe, ja. Ich glaube auch, dass die Veranstalter in dem Sinne smart genug sind, sich die Themen so zurechtzulegen, dass man das Thema auch über ein paar Jahre noch weitermachen kann. Ja.
Also, SEO, Blockchain,
da wird es schon eine Themenpipeline geben, die man Jahr für Jahr immer wieder durchs Dorf treiben kann. Und ich glaube, rein das Thema Geld wird, glaube ich, so schnell nie vorbeigehen. Vielleicht der Fokus wird sich ändern. Deswegen glaube ich auch bewusst, der Bankenfokus, wäre meine Prognose, wird über die nächsten Jahre stärker werden und der Payment-Fokus ein bisschen rausgehen.
Ich habe eins so wahrgenommen, als ich über die Messe gegangen bin oder also über die Ausstellung. Die ganzen Payment-Provider, da hat ja einfach eine ganze Menge stattgefunden in den letzten Monaten. Ne? Also die Konsolidierung der ganzen PSP-Acquirer oder wie auch immer wir sie nennen wollen, das jeweils Payment-Provider, ist ja massiv vorangetrieben worden, gerade in Europa. Gestern nochmal Announcement von Netz und von Concardis und von Six und von Worldline und du
weißt... Ingenico, PSP1.
Genau, alles irgendwie binnen von 2 Wochen, glaube ich. Ne? Das heißt ja eigentlich, dass weniger Aussteller da sein werden in den nächsten Jahren.
Aber die Budgets werden vielleicht größer.
Ja. Siehst du sowas Ähnliches auf die Banken zukommen? Also nicht nächstes Jahr, aber in den nächsten 2 Jahren und auch auf Bankendienstleister, was wir gerade im Payments massiv erleben?
Du meinst das Thema Konsolidierung?
Ja.
Ne? Ich kann es mir durchaus vorstellen, dass das auch im Bankenumfeld passiert. Ich glaube, wir wissen gerade, passiert es schon jetzt nicht auf dieser Ebene, dass die Anzahl der Player wirklich sehr stark minimiert wird. Und im Payment, vor allem im Payment-Abwicklungsbereich, jetzt hier im Acquiring und im Processing, reduzieren sich dadurch die Dienstleister jetzt schon massiv. So stark passiert es bei den Banken nicht. Aber auch da, wie bei jedem in Anführungsstrichen Commodity-ähnlichen Produkt, ist das Skaleneffekt ein Thema. Und Skaleneffekt ist immer, wenn ich es nicht mehr über Vertrieb realisieren kann, das Wachstum, dann muss ich es halt über Konsolidierung machen. Ja.
Was mich ein bisschen gewundert hat, also die ganzen Payment-Dienstleister waren, wie gesagt, sehr, sehr präsent. Thematisch war das Thema Banking mindestens genauso präsent auf den Bühnen, aber bei den Ausstellern nicht, ne?
Ja, glaube ich auch. Also auf den Bühnen hat man schon immer mehr diese Story, Payment und Banking ist doch am Ende doch eins gespielt. Ja, und
unser Mantra.
Ja, schon lange. Für uns nichts Neues. In der Ausstellerfläche hat man das gar nicht gesehen. Ja, und ich glaube, dass...
Außer die großen Kernmarktsysteme. Da war es bei mir, Finastra war da, aber war Avaloq da nie, ne?
Nee, nicht als Aussteller. Ja, nicht als Aussteller, als Gast schon. Aber die waren die ganzen Dienstleister, wo es ja in der Bankenumfeld ja ganz große Player gibt. Auch ein Accenture zum Beispiel. Ja, ja. Von denen hätte ich einen riesen Standort erwartet. Ja, gefühlt nicht präsent. Ja.
KPMG auch nicht.
KPMG was, ne? Nicht, PwC nicht. Die ganzen großen auch Beratungen, ja, die massiv Geschäft dort machen, nicht anwesend. Also deswegen, in dem Sinne gibt es da schon noch.
Capco habe ich noch gesehen.
Ja, zumindest auf den Sponsoren habe ich gesehen. Stand gar nicht, aber also da gibt es schon noch Potenzial. Und das heißt, da werden die Kollegen nicht aufhören, weiter Vertrieb in diese Richtung zu machen.
Was hast du auf der Bühne mitgenommen? Ich weiß, dass du nicht irgendwie super viel Sachen gesehen hast. Hast du irgendwie ein Highlight gehabt irgendwie auf der Bühne in den letzten Tagen?
Ehrlicherweise nur 2 Sachen gesehen. Das eine, was natürlich sich jeder angeschaut hat, Wozniak, der mal so kurz so ein paar Statements gegeben hat, wo man, das war unterhaltsam, trotzdem jetzt nichts Weltbewegendes, wobei man das jetzt auch nicht, oder ich zumindest nicht erwartet habe. Das zweite Thema, was ich mir angehört habe, war Amazon bzw. die Amazon-Kooperation mit Virgin Trains, wo sie sehr stark das Thema Kundenschnittstelle, vor allem am Beispiel von Voice, gepitcht haben. Also Thema auch wieder Payment im Hintergrund. Nichts Neues für uns, aber doch dort stärker in den Vordergrund gerückt.
Okay. Ich habe irgendwie heute, habe ich ja vorhin schon erzählt, weil wir haben ja gerade schon ein kleines Interview davor geführt mit Katharina, die auch hier mit dem Taxi sitzt und uns jetzt zuhören kann. Ich habe heute das Thema Klarna mal so ein bisschen anders verstanden. Also für mich waren die bisher einfach immer nur so einer von den ganzen Payment-Providern. Und natürlich war mir klar, dass die in den Nordics auch unglaublich groß sind, andere Dinge machen. Und ich habe die ehrlich gesagt in den letzten Wochen, weil ich ein paar Sachen bei Wish bestellt habe, das erste Mal richtig wahrgenommen. Und da habe ich gedacht, so, ups, das ist ja irgendwie dann doch andere Art von Payment und andere Art von Userflow, andere Art von Integration. Und war einfach heute echt wirklich beeindruckt von der Keynote von dem Sebastian, ist dann, ne? Von dem Sebastian, von einem von den Gründern, wie die das ganze Thema ich sag mal, Financial Life betrachten. Ne? Die gucken nicht auf Payment, was du ja auch schon ein paar Mal gerade gesagt hast, sondern gucken wirklich auf das komplette Thema Finanzen in Kombination mit Leben. Also wie leben wir, was wollen wir gerade kaufen, was haben wir gekauft, und sehen das natürlich auch im Kontext von GDPR auf der einen Seite und PSD2 auf der anderen Seite einfach auch als Möglichkeit, sich dort auch als Brand zu positionieren. Ne?
Ja, und ich meine, bisschen ähnlich ist es ja die Story, die man über die letzten, keine Ahnung, paar Monaten auch bei PayPal verfolgt hat, dass dieses Payment und Banking sehr, sehr mehr zusammenwirkt,
wobei sie es
anders machen.
Aber ja? Da, muss ich ehrlich gesagt sagen, bin ich so unglaublich, soll ich sagen, enttäuscht oder immer wieder überrascht, wie wenig PayPal da wirklich vorangeht, weil diese ganzen Möglichkeiten hätten sie, haben sie schon lange, und deshalb war ich heute auch so von Klarna positiv überrascht, weil die einfach echt, also jedenfalls aus meiner Perspektive, einen Weg gezeigt haben, den ich total nachvollziehen kann, den ich total logisch finde und wo ich wirklich Chapeau sagen muss, toll.
Genau, weil PayPal war nicht so präsent, wie man es eigentlich gedacht hat. Ja, sie hatten zwar irgendwo einen Stand, aber aufgetaucht
sind sie nicht. Stand hatten sie gar nicht, sie hatten nur eine Ecke, wo du dich mit denen zurückziehen konntest.
Ja, so eine Lounge hatten sie, genau, so eine Lounge. Also. Und auch, was man auch sagen muss, wenn nicht zum Thema nicht präsent,
Adyen.
Adyen, meine Erwartungshaltung war so kurz vor IPO, wir sind in Amsterdam.
Eigentlich müsste es am Flughafen schon gepflastert sein.
Ich habe gedacht, das Ding ist grün. Ne? Das Ding ist grün und die haben ihr Büro direkt in die Konferenz verlegt. War nicht so.
Die waren gar nicht da, ne?
Die waren gar nicht da. Ich glaube, der Roland hat war auf einem Panel gesessen. Habe ich jetzt nicht gesehen, habe ich vorher nur kurz gelesen. Also der CCO von Adyen. Aber Präsenz null. Ja, so, keine Ahnung wieso, aber...
Ja, möglicherweise treffen da so ein bisschen Erwartungshaltung aufeinander, dass die Jungs bei der Money 2020 einfach natürlich auch eine ganze Menge Geld haben wollen von den Leuten, die hier auftreten. Und wahrscheinlich Adyen sagt, ey, wir müssen das irgendwie nicht mehr wirklich so richtig tun, deswegen ist PayPal wahrscheinlich auch sagt, was soll ich mit dem Stand machen hier?
Kann sein. Und da weißt du nicht, wessen Erwartungshaltung wem gegenüber da am Ende zu hoch war. Ja, aber die beiden haben sich zusammengefunden.
Ja, wohl war es. Bei PayPal muss man das sagen, die treten ja aber auch auf Visa und Mastercard, die treten ja einfach auf einem Mobile World Congress zum Beispiel noch viel massiver auf. Ne? Ja. Also auch Mastercard hat einen Stand gehabt, Visa hatte auch nicht wirklich einen Stand. Die hatten eine Lounge. Ne?
Genau, also da ist mir keiner aufgefallen. Mastercard schon. Mastercard Produkte, hat zwei Dinge gesponsert.
Aber haben sie Produkte gezeigt?
Ja, Mastercard hat schon ein bisschen was gezeigt. Also war okay, aber jetzt auch nicht massiv. Ja. Ne? Nicht massiv. Visa wenig. Auch anderes ging es gar nicht.
Ne? Hast du deutsche Fintechs gesehen? Gab es auf jeden Stand von irgendwem oder hast du irgendwen auf der Bühne gesehen?
Bühne war ich zu wenig, um es wirklich beantworten zu können. Jetzt nach einem Stand fragst.
Also es gab halt ein Announcement direkt am Anfang, ne, von der ING, das Investment in FinCompare, deutsches Startup.
Ja, also einen richtigen Stand, der über dem Stand der Größe, ich bekomme zwei Tickets und habe dann halt
einen kleinen Tisch. Ich habe ein Punktplakat gesehen, zum Thema niederländisches Startup, gerade an der Bahnhaltestelle.
Waren aber auch nicht auf der Money20. Gestern habe ich übrigens ein Punkboot gesehen auf meiner Bootsfahrt, ein großes, das uns überholt hat.
Maximilian hat man auf der Bühne gesehen, N26. Ja, der war noch da.
Ja, aber
Matthias Kröner, war der auf der Bühne noch
irgendwo? Ja, war irgendwie angekündigt, aber gesehen habe ich ihn nicht. Ja. Und wie gesagt, Widerstand auch eher klein. Also fand ich jetzt nicht so präsent. Ja, also deutsche Fintechs.
Wer war noch da?
Solaris Bank.
Stimmt, Katharina, vielen Dank.
Solaris war schon größer.
Solaris Bank hatte wieder diesen coolen Stand, der beim letzten Mal noch auffälliger war, weil er direkt am Eingang war, die Speakers Lounge. Also wirklich eine coole Art, wirklich präsent zu sein, weil alle Speaker an ihnen vorbeilaufen mussten und sie hatten ihre kleine Booth dann auch da. Ne? Das war echt gut gemacht. Ich glaube, stimmt, hier Roland war auch auf der Bühne. Ja. Und Marco heute auch nochmal. Also Solaris war sehr präsent. Stimmt. Ja. Stimmt. Zu Recht. Kilian, was nehmen wir sonst damit, außer dass wir jetzt mittlerweile fast am Ende unserer Taxifahrt, glaube ich, angelangt sind. Was nimmst du mit aus Amsterdam?
Ich nehme mit, dass ich mir für das ganze Thema mehr Zeit nehmen muss, um das wirklich sinnvoll alles mal mitzuverfolgen. Ich merke jetzt in dem Gespräch, dass ich, glaube ich, einiges nicht mitgenommen habe, was ich hätte mitnehmen können. Ja.
Wir reflektieren gerade. Ja, wir sind Sprechdenker.
Durch die Aussprache lernen wir. Ja. Also das nehme ich mit. Ja. Und auch das Vornehmen zu sagen, dass ein bisschen die Aufteilung zwischen Gespräche und Zuhören vielleicht ein bisschen mal mehr in die Richtung Zuhören zu geben und nicht so viel selber zu reden, weil gefühlt habe ich durchgeredet und eigentlich, wenn man selber redet, lernt man wenig. Und das ist das, was ich mitnehme.
Ich habe mich heute bewusst auch nochmal so für eine Stunde, anderthalb in einen Raum reingesetzt. Das war dann in der Tat auch der Regulatorik-Part. Das war echt gut. Also, man, die waren zwar, das war ein bisschen dunkel, ne? Es war kalt in den Räumen und es war auch unglaublich dunkel.
Ja.
Also, die Gefahr, dass du da, wenn du mal irgendwie so kurz dich zurücklehnst, auch mal die Augen zumachst, war auch relativ groß.
Das passiert mir auch immer gerne.
Passiert dir gerne, ja. Was sonst noch? Irgendwas, was du noch so mitgeben willst den Leuten? Mal hinkommen, ne?
Mal hinkommen, sich das ganze Spektakel mal anschauen. Das war teilweise schon sehr spektakulär.
So, muss man sagen, also die machen das schon echt geil, ne?
Die Mainstage war schon, als ich da erstmal drin war, ich dachte so, okay, bin jetzt irgendein Konzert oder irgendwas. Ja. Und eigentlich waren doch nur langweilige Payment-Partys auf der Bühne, aber es war schon gut gemacht. Ne?
Und das ganze Ding war natürlich irgendwie auch als Zirkus im Grunde genommen aufgemacht. Ja. Ne? Also nicht so schlecht, nicht so schlecht. So, ich glaube, wir sind jetzt hier irgendwo vielleicht bei unserem Essen angekommen. Ich weiß noch nicht genau, wo.
Jetzt müssen wir es nur finden.
Ja. Ja, aber da vorne, das könnte es sein, oder mit diesem Türmchen oder so. War da nicht so ein Ding drin?
Ja.
So, Kilian, dann alles sind klar. Wir, glaube ich, am Ende angelangt.
So, das war die 159. Ausgabe des Fintech-Podcasts von paymentbanking.com. Vielen, vielen Dank, dass ihr bislang dabei geblieben seid, auch wegen der leider etwas schlechteren Tonqualität im Vergleich zu sonst. Ich bedanke mich ferner an InnoPay Consulting, die uns natürlich in diesem Monat unterstützen, hier im Podcast, also am Blog, und wünsche euch noch eine gute Woche. Viel Spaß!